Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by John Bubb, as I meet you every week. How are you doing, John?
Hey, Andrew. How's it going?
Good. We haven't done a show in a couple of weeks. I just got back from Vegas. I was traveling last week. It was an entire ordeal because I flew standby. I didn't fly with tickets, and I got bumped off my first flight, and I made it on the second one. At around 9:40.
You seem to have a lot of problems with flying lately.
It's always like that with me when I fly. It never goes smoothly. There's always some sort of delay. I mean, the last three times that I've flown, okay? Last time I went to Cancun, and, there was a JetBlue thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I flew to L.A., and the furlough went into effect that day. And my flight didn't take off. For 2 hours, there was a delay because there was nobody in Los Angeles to taxi in the plane. So it seems like it's every time that I'm flying. I'm actually flying to Los Angeles in July. Let's just see what happens in July now. The flight back, the flight back from Las Vegas was a breeze.
You have problems with flying, period.
I have problems, period.
You and flying don't go together.
No, I have problems, period. Me and everything don't go together. It's always an issue for me, everything. But I'll tell you something, John. You know, we talk about technology. We're going to talk about the news. But I want to talk about the tech that you take with you when you travel. For years, I have always been a heavy tech packer. So I always bring a camera. I bring my phone, I bring my iPad, I bring my laptop, I also bring my iPod if I want to listen to something on the plane. This year, I didn't do any of that. I cut out the iPod, I cut out everything. All I had with me was my phone and my laptop. That's it. And
did you feel naked?
No. I mean, that's a surprising thing. The reason why I don't use my phone as my MP3 player. I hate doing it because I always feel that the battery is never good on these things. And as soon as you start doing anything on it, it's going to kill the battery. And that's the last thing you want is to be stranded with like 2% battery when you're going away somewhere. So I've always had like a backup device that I listen to my music on. I loaded up everything on my, and the reason why I did this is because I was so late to pack. So in the morning, while we're getting ready to go, I realized I hadn't loaded up any MP3s, so I just went on my phone. I downloaded all the MP3s that I wanted to load up, and that was it. I was finished. But let me ask you this, John, okay? I'm going to ask you something. If, let's say, you sent me an MP3, okay, mm-hmm. of a podcast, how do I load that to my iPhone? This sounds like such a dumb question, but I had such difficulty loading something to Jessica's, to her iPhone. I wanted to load an MP3 in her iPhone, and I couldn't do it.
From your phone?
No. Just I connected it to my iTunes, connected the phone. Now what do I do?
Oh, it's a whole process in iTunes.
It's a disaster, right?
You have to configure all the sync settings, and then you have to click on what you want to sync, and then you have to actually click sync. And
it's not easy.
If you don't do it regularly, it's not easy.
So
if you do it regularly, it's not hard.
Now, I've done this. I've done this many times in the past, a ton of times. For whatever reason, I couldn't figure this out. I couldn't figure it out. It seemed like it's such a simple thing to do, but no matter what I did, I checked the right sync one. I did manually sync podcasts, manually sync music. It wasn't, no matter what I did, it would not load it, and it was an MP3. So I just totally gave up. I downloaded it on her phone rather than doing it the other way. Or what I've also done is downloaded via Dropbox and listen to it in Dropbox, which is such a convoluted way of doing it, but I've done it that way. With this, and this is one of the first times I'm praising Android, it is so easy to load something you want on here and take it and listen to it.
I wouldn't even know how to do it on Android either.
You just download it like it's a computer. I mean, you could sync it. Like, if I connect this to my laptop, that, I could just drag and drop it.
I think that's kind of why people use iCloud. I think iCloud is one of those ways where it becomes so much easier for an iOS device to sync and have music on its device.
Now, let me tell you this. If it's in the App Store and you're downloading, it's very easy to do it if the podcast is in iTunes. This specific podcast is not on iTunes. It's a subscription-based podcast. So right. I can't download it via iTunes and have it load up. I have to manually download it, put it there, and put it. I had a very difficult time, and I'm sure I'm going to get an email saying, Andrew, no, it's very easy to do it. It just, for someone that is not really in the iOS experience on an everyday basis, I use my iPad every day, but I don't use an iPhone every day. I found it a little convoluted.
If you don't use it every day or you don't do it often, yeah, it can be somewhat off-putting, the process of doing stuff like that.
But I'll tell you, I had my phone. I listened to all my MP3s on the phone. I had my laptop just in case I needed to get some work done, which I really didn't even use the laptop. Actually, no, I did. You know what I used it for? To watch WrestleMania in the hotel. Spencer actually got really into it. I'm going to talk about it on the free-for-all, but I actually watched WrestleMania on my laptop in the hotel with the hotel's Wi-Fi, and I had no dropouts.
That's pretty cool.
It was actually insane how stable it was during NAB when you know this is at max occupancy, and all these people are tech geeks, and they're all doing something on their laptop.
I don't think I've ever been to any hotel that offered Wi-Fi in any capacity that hasn't had issues for me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Even
if I'm paying $8 for the night to access the Wi-Fi at a higher speed, I still have issues.
No, this thing was crazy. I was just on Wi-Fi, and it was absolutely perfect. And I was blown away. When I did the speed test, I was getting like 20 megs by 20 megs.
Wow.
So if I had wired it, which they do supply you with a wire, I could have, who knows what it would have been, but it worked perfectly, and I used it. But it's interesting how these devices now, you're cutting down on how many things you're bringing, and you're only bringing one or two things now. If I had...
You could get away with just your iPad, I think.
Oh, 100%.
If you didn't have to do any sort of work, you could easily get away with just an iPad.
I'll tell you, Jess brought her iPad, and she has Word on there now, and she did all of her work on the plane in Word on the iPad.
Yeah, I mean, now when I go on vacations, I really don't take anything with me. I just take my phone and that's it.
That's it. Well, but you do like crazy stuff like remoting into my computer via your phone.
If that's just for emergencies. If I really do have to do work, I have to have access to some sort of computer. And usually I know somebody that has a computer that I can just borrow.
Yeah, I mean, you've actually...
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. So I just wanted to tell the story about how I've actually cut down on so many devices, and traveling and bringing electronics with me is really
I still think that totally if you do want to have great pictures on a vacation or something like that, you still need to bring a separate camera. Yeah, you can largely get away with just using your camera phone, but if you want great pictures, you want to be able to actually zoom in and whatnot, you really should bring a camera with you.
I think for 90% of people, the iPhone is the best camera that you could buy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, last year when I visited my sister in Nashville, I just used my iPhone, which was great for most of the time. I mean, there's some times where it'd be nice if you could, you know, zoom in like 10x or something.
Yeah.
That's the only caveat with camera phones, is that you really can't do any sort of optical zoom.
Well, I think that's going to change, really, if you know, in the coming years.
Yeah, you can kind of do that now with the Nokia PureView cameras, but it's still kind of a wonky way of doing it where it's just a larger megapixel sensor that you just crop.
Yeah. Hey, John, why don't you go into a story? I want you to pick the first one today.
So there's been a lot of talk this week about this heartbeat blug. I don't even know what that is. The heartbeat blug, a lot of people are very curious about this, trying to figure out what it is, and in a way, it is somewhat scary. This week, there was a major new vulnerability called Heartbleed that could let attackers gain access to users' passwords and fool people into using bogus versions of websites. This has to do with the OpenSSL software that is found on about two-thirds of web servers out there today. And so this is a very serious problem because of that.
Some already say that they found Yahoo passwords as a result.
Yahoo is one of the major websites that have been affected. And this is very, very, very bad because the way this bug works is that an attacker could gain access to the web encryption system of a server, copy it, or even access what's stored in the server using the encryption, and nobody would ever know that anything was wrong.
So you don't even – I mean, this isn't even like a I know a lot of people that fall for those like fake banking websites, right? Like if you go to like a city –
No, this is way worse than that.
They've actually infiltrated.
Yeah, they could basically clone the encryption and make it look exactly like the bank's website.
Wow.
You would have absolutely no idea whatsoever.
You have no clue. I mean, there would be no way to tell. Because
it would be exactly the same.
Unless you look at, you know, what you're actually going to.
No, even then you might not be able to tell.
Really?
Yeah.
How would they mask that?
I mean, there's ways to mask that, but this is the way that this encryption is set up is that they add this OpenSSL stuff to it, and that just kind of disguises the passwords and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way it works. And it'll also do the verification stuff so that you can see it in your address bar. It'll actually say in your address bar the exact company, and it'll match the real website.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And even worse than that is the fact that now what a lot of websites are saying, or a lot of security experts are saying, is that you need to go and change your password on any of these affected websites.
And what's the list of websites that are affected by this?
All right, let me bring that up. I have a link for that real quick.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it. I know I bookmarked it because I wanted to see it. Here it is. It's on Mashable. Facebook was affected.
Huh.
Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Pinterest, Twitter, Tumblr. Google, Yahoo, Gmail, Yahoo Mail, GoDaddy.
A lot of Google services.
TurboTax, Dropbox, Minecraft, OkCupid.
And Amazon Web Services and GoDaddy.
Now, there's the other side of the coin. At this point, according to the original GitHub list we found, these are among the most prominent, recognizable, and popular websites that are allegedly not affected by it. Google, Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Facebook.com, YouTube, Wikipedia, Twitter. So there's an issue here. Because some are saying that it is vulnerable and some are saying that it's not. But you know what's interesting? A lot of websites do not use SSL.
Mm-hmm.
LinkedIn, eBay, Bing. They
use SSL, but they might not use OpenSSL, or they might use a different version because this is limited to a very specific version of OpenSSL. And OpenSSL is used on about 2/3 of every web server out there. And what's also scary about this is that while there are experts saying that you need to go and change your website on any of these affected passwords or affected websites, there could be danger in just doing that as well, whereby if those websites haven't patched their web servers from this bug, changing your password could be exactly the way that they steal
your password. Very interesting.
Because if they haven't patched it, well, then somebody could be attacking that web server and grabbing all the information going to it.
All these new passwords.
So before you change your password, you should make sure that the website that you're changing your password on has been patched or is clear of that vulnerability.
Well, I mean, the good news here is that YouPorn is not vulnerable to Heartbleed. So I'm glad for that. That's very good news. This list is humongous. You know, there's a really digitaltrends.com has a very...
Yeah, like I said, this affects about 2/3 of the web servers out there. And it's crazy because if you think about how many web servers that really is, and how long nobody really knows how long this is actually going to take to fix. There are patches out there now, but the fact is these patches still have to be applied manually.
Yeah.
Ooh, I mean, boy. We just recently got into running a bunch of web servers ourselves.
Yeah, for JFK.
The majority of the servers out there are what are called unmanaged servers, whereby you're responsible for updating and security updates for that web server.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for us, you're really on top of these things and you're constantly updating them. But I could guarantee you most majority of unmanaged web servers are not being managed at all.
Oh, totally.
I know many people that are on dedicated servers.
That actually could be a blessing in disguise, whereby some websites are running an older version of OpenSSL and therefore not affected by this.
Isn't that amazing that the older version may not be affected?
Yeah.
You would always you kind of imagine that the older ones are the ones that have the trouble.
This is a bug that they just discovered, but this version has been around for 2 years now.
Wow.
So if you think about it, and how many web servers that could be over the past 2 years, anybody could have exploited this bug.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It's scary, especially considering the fact that there's so many websites out there, and not all of them are very good at communicating if they've patched this bug or not.
So what are they saying now?
I mean, website and
I don't understand one thing. So I'm looking at this list here. And you know, Google is on here. They're saying they're patched since, and now they're safe to use. Okay, so these are the sites that the ones that I read to you were the ones that are now safe to use. But Google was affected at one point.
Yes, they were.
Okay, so
they were on top of it though, and patched them as quickly as possible.
Okay, so there's actually a list of sites that have patched the vulnerability on Digital Trends, if you want to go look at it. I kind of got confused because I'm looking at two lists here, and one is saying that it's not vulnerable and one is saying that it is. It wasn't an updated list. Now a lot of these sites have updated. Oh, great. And Xvideos is not vulnerable either. That's also really good. But
yeah,
Google.ru.
Just make sure that before you do change your password that the website is patched, because if you change your password before the vulnerability is patched, you're not doing yourself any favor there.
Yeah. Well, we don't really do a lot of the security stuff and the web stuff like that. But I thought this was a big story that so many websites are affected by this, and most people use one password for everything. And even if it's a complicated password, they're still using one or two passwords for everything. And this just shows
everybody's pretty much guilty of that.
Everybody is, and you know, we've kind of learned to do these convoluted passwords and have characters in them, but
you could do LastPass.
You could do LastPass, but if you know, let's say your Facebook gets compromised, your Facebook account, I essentially have your main email address and I have your main password.
Most likely.
And I could get into any one of your accounts. I could get into your Twitter, and from that, I could go down that rabbit hole and find everything else. If I get into your Google password, I have everything once I get into Google. And there's nothing you can really do. I'll tell you something, though, John. Google is very good at determining where you are and what you're doing. So when I was in Vegas, I tried to log into my Google account, and a screen popped up. It goes, "Hey, just want to make sure you're you. We're seeing some suspicious activity because you're traveling. This isn't a location that you logged in from." They sent me a notification to my phone to, you know, kind of like determine if it's me or not.
Yeah, that's largely IP-based.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty decent of them to do. But either way, I mean, it happens. Going to a story, John. I want you to control the flow of the stories today. I'm your guest.
Well, I kind of want to get your thoughts, because you were in Vegas and you actually went to NAB earlier this week. And Microsoft made a major announcement regarding Skype this week, saying that they are announcing Skype TX, a broadcaster or studio-grade audio and video for broadcasters. What it'll do is that it's a service technology developed by Cat & Mouse, a recent Microsoft acquisition, to offer higher quality audio and video output that media professionals require. It'll also support broadcast standard HD-SDI interface. You actually met with Skype while you were there at NAB this week.
I did.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what it is that they're going to be doing?
Yeah, so now here was the issue with this. They were very careful in what they told you. Right now, this is looking like it is a hardware software solution. So it looks like it's going to be a box that does HD SDI in, HD SDI out. It's going to be
kind of like a set-top box or a Mac Mini.
That is the impression that they gave me, that it is some sort of set-top box. You connect it, it does SDI in, SDI out. You also get a lot of controls over the video. You get to control the aspect ratio. You get to control the quality of it. So from if we're going to go based on what they were doing with Microsoft Link, you could, if you have a Link server, you could actually throttle it. You could determine what kind of bandwidth it's going to be sent at. You could determine what kind of video resolution you're receiving. There's also going to be audio tweaks, so you could manage the audio. There's going to be audio delay, sync delay on the audio. We don't have a price right now, which is unfortunate. But I,
That is unfortunate, because this is something that I know that you and me and a lot of other podcasters have been interested in for a long time, since this is something that we use for what we do. Twit does it. We do it. A lot of other podcasters that do video podcasting use this to bring in guests. And this is something that we've all been kind of clamoring for, is some way to have more control over our Skype calls.
Now, I did learn a little bit about the audio and video quality. The video will be much higher. The term was used, double bit rate. So I believe that was a term that somebody used to me. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know what they're considering the current bit rate for video. If I would assume it's between 2.5 to 5 megabits per second for HD 1080p via, you know, one of the Logitech C920s. So we're looking at maybe 5 to 10 megabits for the video quality for higher res video. The audio, I was told that it will be implementing a new codec, which I'm assuming it's Opus. They announced that last year that they're going to be implementing the Opus codec, which gives you studio-grade audio, or they called it HD audio. And I'm using air quotes for people that are not watching and they're listening. I don't know what HD audio means to them. And if you run out of bandwidth, it's also going to revert back to Silk. So it's going to do this weird hybrid where at times it'll be incorporating Silk, the Silk 3 codec, and
so it's still going to have some sort of automatic controls.
It's going to have some sort of automatic controls. The way that they said is that they're going to have it. You're going to be able to just set everything on auto, and it's going to determine it, or you could control it depending on where they are and what they're doing. One example that they gave me was remote on screen locations. Like they were doing a demo there, and they were showing someone in a London studio that was using the live stream streaming unit. And they were sending HD 1080p video.
Yeah, I'm looking at the demo video of this.
Now,
it looks like it has a lot of information with it as well on the screen as far as what you're doing.
Do you have the demo? Let me see what you're looking at, because I haven't. I was there and it got a little confusing on what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm looking at the video that's on Engadget's article here.
Okay, so that video that I saw. Yeah, this is exactly what I was demoing. If you could see on the screen, I'd love to be able to pull this up and make it a larger picture. There's a lot of information there. There's a ton of information.
Yeah, basically what it is, it has that built-in call technical info screen automatically with the interface. You don't have to pop it out into a separate window anymore.
Yeah. And from the settings, I think you control all of that. That's all controlled. The other thing that they told me is that currently it's one Skype instance that you could run on it, but they are looking by release to have up to four instances. That's their key number.
Wow.
Is four instances on one unit. I think this is where the pricing thing happens, where I think they're going to start at around, if I'm just guessing, I think we're going to see couple hundred bucks, $500-$600, and it's going to go all the way up to maybe, you know, a couple thousand. For a box
in a way, this almost sounds like they're making a Skype appliance.
They're making
Google's Telus Alliance has, or other people in the radio business have these appliances to do video broadcasting and stuff. This is going to be an appliance.
Somebody asked an interesting thing. They said, "Is this unit going to be rack mountable?" And they said, "Yeah, they're working on a rack mount."
Yeah, so this is basically going to be a Skype appliance. It sounds like,
yeah,
which to me is a brilliant idea and something I think they should have done a good year or two ago.
You know, for the longest time, they were not very welcoming of broadcasters using this. It wasn't the most open of platforms for them to use, but it seems like they've kind of accepted that people are going to use this and people are going to want to do, a lot of stuff. Now,
I wonder if maybe that push is coming from Microsoft and not necessarily the original Skype team.
It's probably coming from Microsoft because they're more enterprise-based than the original Skype team. The other thing was they did say eventually there will be a software version of this.
Okay.
So I think the hardware is coming first, and then they're going to go with the software. But there's an open beta program. If anybody's interested, you can go to the website, media.skype.com. You could click on the more about Skype TX, and you could sign up. And they will be starting a beta program in about 3 months, and that's going to be running for about 6 to 9 months. And after that, they're looking to release it by the end of the year.
So we probably won't see any of this until end of 2015, you're saying?
No. They're hopeful.
End of this year?
End of this year. That's what they're hoping.
For the hardware, but then it'll be end of next year before we see the software.
They were very careful on what they were saying. Now, I do see some hope in the fact that they will most probably implement a lot of these features in the next version of Skype, like the Opus codec. That's something mm-hmm. that's going to be added. The higher bitrate for video, that's something that's going to be added. If you don't need HDSDI, which 90% of internet broadcasters don't need HDSDI,
right.
And we just want to use the Blackmagic hardware, I think there's going to be a solution for that, because they were very open about saying, we realize people want to use things other than a webcam. And it's been a struggle for them to kind of understand this, that people want to use a capture card, okay, but none of them work. It's right. There are resolution issues. Right now, I'm sending you a Blackmagic Intensity Pro 720p, but guess what, John? At times, it's bouncing from 360 to 720 for no apparent reason. No reason at all.
Right.
I have enough, more than enough bandwidth. If I do Wirecast, it works, but only on an older version. And I told him this. I said, you know, it's kind of going to a flea market and trying to find two shoes at 10 different stores that fit. You're trying to find the same pair of shoes. Same size, but who knows what size you're going to find. And you don't know if it's going to work.
Right.
So, and they were actually surprised by that. They go, well, we like to work with certain companies. I go, yeah, but it's everything. Everything has been like this with you guys. And I don't expect them to change because I said that. But they were kind of surprised that, you know, this is the issue that people have. And it makes it very difficult. Now, with that said, I also saw a bunch of other companies out there at NAB that are getting into this type of appliance hardware on both ends to send video and audio. And you know what? Opus is opening it up, because with the Opus codec, you could essentially have much better audio quality than Skype. And it's something that's, you know, a professional grade box. So there's a lot of changes happening. I'm excited for this. I mean, a lot of our viewers, they're podcasters, they were into this stuff. You know, this is something that we've spoken about. We have our own Skype servers that
we've been talking about this for at least a good 2 years.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? They were asking me, like, how do you utilize Skype? And I told them, I'm like, I essentially have built a server rack of Skype machines. And I have 4 Skype machines that do video in and video out, all sending HD. And we use them for on-air. And they were stunned. They're like, so you have dedicated machines for each one? I go, yep. And we're using IP audio. We're implementing IP audio in these things. And they were actually shocked that, you know, a home user, I'm not the traditional radio station, a home user is using Skype like this.
I think this is something that they've never really considered, or they didn't really want to consider. They just want to do exactly what they were doing. They're in a way, they were set in this traditional voice over IP space where we've come to a point where now people are utilizing this service for far more than just, you know, just the average person with a web camera making video calls to a friend.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's really what they need to expand on now, is going into a more professional area. And this is kind of the same problem that we had with other services of similar nature. Uvu is kind of the same way, where, you know, they've been doing this for, you know, 5-10 years now, and it's great, but people are now using this for more of a professional application, and nobody is really paying attention to those types of users.
It's hard when you're one of the only ones that's screaming to get this stuff implemented. But now I guess more and more people are kind of talking about this. If anybody wants to watch a video of, you know, it was a really good interview. Vance Willis from Studio Tech interviewed one of the guys from Skype at NAB. I'll post it in our show notes if you guys want to go watch it, because it's actually really informative, and he got a lot of questions answered. You know, and they were pretty careful on what they were saying and what they wouldn't say. But I would definitely check it out. His video was pretty informative. Out of all the interviews that I've seen, it's actually one of the better ones. But let's see what happens. You know, we got a couple of months till it comes. And, you know, for me, it's exciting. I don't know for anybody else.
Absolutely. I'm definitely excited. I'm a little apprehensive because this is something that, in a way, right now is still vaporware. And we don't have any sort of time frame on when this will be released or even any sort of prices. So I'm a little apprehensive about that.
Yeah. Going to another story, John.
So I kind of want to talk about this story that came out last week that T-Mobile is no longer going to be carrying BlackBerry devices. If you remember, there's been a lot of back and forth between BlackBerry and T-Mobile over the last month or two, whereby T-Mobile had this promotion where they said, all right, bring in your old phone, your old iPhone or BlackBerry, whatever it is, bring it in, and we'll set you up with a new iPhone for $100 less. We'll give you $100 off if you bring in your old BlackBerry.
And BlackBerry was not very happy about this.
No, their new CEO, John Chen, was very pissed off at T-Mobile over this. Actually called them out several times over this, had some conversations over the phone with them, and eventually they offered the same deal to BlackBerry users. All right, well, bring in your old BlackBerry. We'll give you $100 off a new BlackBerry. So now it seems like that kind of was the catalyst in terms of BlackBerry now dropping licensing for T-Mobile. That's exactly what's happened now is that BlackBerry put out a tweet saying that beginning, I think, April 25th, T-Mobile will no longer be carrying BlackBerry devices, that they are not renewing the license with T-Mobile.
So they're not renewing.
Sounds like this sounds like BlackBerry is pulling any sort of deal with T-Mobile. It's not anything T-Mobile necessarily did to do this, but apparently BlackBerry is just so upset with T-Mobile that they're not going to renew their licensing.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the end. You one is down. How soon till, you know, Sprint drops them and Verizon drops them?
This is very, you know, ever since they appointed John Chen as the new CEO, that's been a very interesting company, to say the least, I think. They made a few moves here and there, and there's been a lot of talk about them in the news. I'm just not sure that any of this stuff is really going to pan out. This week we heard rumors that they might be ready to finally sell off their handset business. John Chen comes out and says, oh, no, that's not really what I meant. That was taken out of context. And then they also said, oh, well, we have this Q20 that we're coming out with, BlackBerry Q20, but we're going to rename it to BlackBerry Classic. I'm like, oh, good grief. Yeah. Nobody wants a BlackBerry phone anymore.
I say this all the time. It's so sad because I really think that the last phone that they put out was great.
Problem is that they burned so many bridges in getting to that point, and they're still burning bridges. So I don't see how BlackBerry is going to be able to survive, at least not in the consumer world. In my opinion, they're completely toast as it stands now in the consumer world. They might have still some sway in terms of enterprise business, but as far as consumers go, consumers don't give a crap about BlackBerry anymore. They're completely toast.
Do you feel like they have a chance in emerging market? I mean, they have some sort of
they're going to run their same course that they ran here, where they're going to come out with these stupid phones. They're going to come out with the BlackBerry Q20, which is now the BlackBerry Classic. They'll sell it maybe in some emerging markets eventually in a year from now or whatever, and they're just going to do these iterative updates where, oh, well, now we have Wi-Fi and GPS. You don't have to choose between either of them.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same crap where they'll do that for 5 years and then have nothing else to offer.
what an awful situation this company has been in.
I see John Chen is kind of in a way a great person to be heading BlackBerry as far as an enterprise business. The problem is that there's so much bad publicity out there from a consumer standpoint that consumers just don't give a crap about BlackBerry anymore, and I'm not sure that enterprise really cares anymore either.
No,
because there's been so many new inroads from Apple and Android,
and the next version of Android,
you don't have to rely on BlackBerry anymore.
And that's
what it comes down to.
It's been rumored that the next version of Android is really going to concentrate on enterprise.
Yeah, so if Android really started hitting and marketing towards the enterprise business, BlackBerry is totally done in that as well.
Yeah, I, listen, I, it's it really comes down to what the IT guy was using for years. And the IT guy was using a BlackBerry. And you know what? These IT guys now, they're using iPhones. That's the reality of it. So if they're using iPhones, they're going to tell you it's fine to use an iPhone.
Right.
That's just how it goes.
Well, for the longest time, for a good 2 or 3 years, BlackBerry was the device to have for reliable email on your phone. Now it's just not the case anymore. You can have an iPhone, an Android, a BlackBerry, a Windows phone. It doesn't matter what smartphone you get, you're going to have reliable email.
Yeah. I would rather have a Windows phone than a BlackBerry, to be honest.
I think that would be a safer way to go, because who knows when you'll get any sort of update for a BlackBerry phone.
Yeah. Hey, since I brought up Apple, let's talk about this one. Apple to sell 2 sizes of the iWatch. Whatever
the iWatch. This is just a rumor, by the way.
It's a rumor. With flexible AMOLED display this fall. In the midst of the rumor and speculation, a research note from KGI analyst Ming-Chi Cao, obtained by Apple Insider, offered a more comprehensive look at Apple's supposed iWatch. Cao has been proven track record of predicting Apple's next hardware moves. So they're actually predicting that it's going to have a 1.3-inch to 1.5-inch flexible AMOLED display with sapphire cover, suggesting that the device screen will curve to fit the user's wrist. In addition, Apple is thought to be incorporating liquid metal and mechanical parts. For mechanical parts, I should say. So what do you think of this, John? I mean, is this that rumored device that, you know, we've been waiting for?
This sounds like an article about every rumor that we've heard for an iWatch or iPhone in the past year and a half. That's what it sounds like to me. I can't take any of this seriously whatsoever.
We know that they're going with the sapphire covers now on their phones. We know that that's the next step that they're going to be taking.
This is just so pure speculation. There's nothing substantial behind this whatsoever, other than somebody at some sort of analytical firm saying, oh, yeah, well, all this evidence that we've seen is pointing towards this, and so we think this is going to happen.
I would love that. I mean, you know, I'm not really big on these I'm trying to go to 9 to 5 Mac, and I'm having a real difficult time here.
It's just, it's Apple. Everybody's going to make these rumors. We've already had rumors of there's going to be 2 screen sizes for the new iPhone 6.
But that makes a lot more sense, though, right?
Sizes for the iWatch.
But that makes a lot more sense. I think they're in the position, right? Like right now, I was using my wife's phone the other day, and the screen is too small. I mean, it really is. It's a 4-inch screen.
They have to have a bigger screen. They have to. If they're going to compete in this new world where we have these megaphones where they're 5 inches.
It's become the norm.
A 4-inch screen is not going to cut it. You need to have something that's going to be more in line with a 5-inch screen.
It's become the norm to have these larger 5.5, 6-inch screens. Like this thing is 5.7, 5.6 inches. I don't even notice that it's a large screen anymore. At first, I was actually it was way too big. Now
Jessica's phone feels really small compared to that, doesn't it?
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, really, really small. But to her, she has no interest in a larger phone because she's never owned one. I guarantee you, the new iPhone comes out, and let's say they're doing a 5-inch screen, you can't look back once you go to a 5-inch screen. It's very difficult to go. What was really hard for me was to use the iPhone 4, the 4S.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
That's a 3.5-inch screen.
That's crazy. Yeah, I had a old, what is it?
iPod Touch
2, second generation. And I'm just comparing those two side by side. I'm like, holy crap. Even those older ones compared to the 5, it's just tiny.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening, and you know, Apple for the longest time they were the ones in ahead of the race, but now because the market has become so competitive, they've really, as far as aesthetically, their phones are beautiful, their devices are beautiful, operating system and ecosystem, they're still great, but the actual hardware for the iPad still is king in my opinion. There's nothing better than the iPad on the market, but when it comes to the phones, they've really fallen behind when it comes to features that people want. And a larger screen is one of them. It really is.
And they kind of, in a way, half-assed it with a 4-inch screen. Yes, we made it taller, just not wider.
Yeah, I'm curious.
That was a little disappointing. And we're like, oh, you made it bigger, but not really bigger?
Yeah.
Like, it's taller, but it's not any wider, so it's not necessarily bigger. It just has a taller screen, so it still doesn't make much sense.
So, by the way, Comcast and Time Warner are filing with the FCC. It says that saying that Apple is exploring new set-top boxes. So this is something that we've been talking about, how possibly the set-top box will become an Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of that, you know, they're trying to compete with Google.
I believe it when I see it.
You know, I would love it. I would love it just to get a set-top box, and it's just an, you know, just connect that one box and that's it.
Here's what's going to happen. It's Comcast, it's Time Warner, it's Apple. You're going to get something that is not going to live up to everybody's expectations. It's going to be it'll be something more than what we have now, but it's not going to be exactly or anything that close to what people actually want.
I mean, technically,
it'll be like, oh yes, you'll be able to access any sort of Comcast programming on your Apple TV.
No, see, I would love to have, you know, just connect the cable to that thing.
That would be great, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that.
Yeah, I guess the problem would be like encryption and stuff like that.
Oh, it can easily be done. I mean, all you do is you make what you would have to do is make a spot in the Apple TV for a cable card.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And then all you would do is go to Comcast or Time Warner and request a cable card and put it in there.
Yeah. Let's see what happens.
That's all you would have to do. A lot of people do that now with Silicon Dust. They have these HD Home Run Primes, which a lot of people use, and they have cable card versions where all you do is you put in a cable card, and now you have this super cool TV tuner that you can access on your network.
Yeah, but even with the cable cards, I know that some channels are not picked up, and they're doing weird encryption, and some cable cards work and other ones don't. It's a whole thing with the cable cards.
Yeah. It's not super easy to set up, but yeah, that's how you would do it.
Yeah, since we're on the set-top box topic, let's talk about Amazon launching the Fire TV. Now, I was away, so we didn't get to talk about this. Not bad. It's a quad-core CPU, 2 gigs of RAM. The thing is a Roku box on steroids, pretty much.
I don't know if I would say on steroids, but it's on par with the Roku, I think.
Oh, it's much faster. The interface is tremendously compared to what you're getting with Roku.
In that regard, but since it came out last week, we've seen a lot of reviews since then, and we're slowly finding out all the little caveats about this.
Yeah. What do you think about it,
whereby
John?
Voice search doesn't work with everything, or Amazon. Everything that's related to Amazon works great. Yeah. Loads instantly. You can do a voice search, but when it comes to anything else, it's not nearly as great.
See,
it's good. It's on par with Roku, but you can clearly see a difference in quality and speed of the interface and everything compared to, you know, when you're using Amazon compared to anything else like Netflix.
Ron Knights brings up an interesting point. He goes, yeah, but I already have 4 set-top boxes. See, that's the biggest problem now. How many of these devices do we need to run Hulu and to run Netflix, because that's essentially what everybody's doing, or Amazon Prime, which is on everything. How many more do we need? If I have a Roku and I have an Apple TV and I have a Google TV and I got a Chromecast, do I need to get an Amazon Fire TV?
Not necessarily. It's going to be one of those things where if you already have those devices, you're not likely going to buy one.
I guess it's whatever ecosystem you're in.
The benefit of this is if you're already in the Amazon ecosystem, this is a definitely good buy for you because you're already in that ecosystem. If you already have a Roku, the latest Roku, you might not need to buy anything unless you're a tech enthusiast.
Oh, but John,
wait.
Google's coming out with the Android TV.
Yeah, that's another one of those things where I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, I saw the screenshots are out. Nothing great.
Screenshots don't mean anything.
Nothing great.
We've been hearing about a new Google TV for 2 years.
And an Xbox. People got Xboxes. They got PlayStations. Xbox actually has a pass-through now. So, really, how many of these devices do we need? The reality is, once you're in an ecosystem, you're invested, and you're not going to go anywhere else. That's the truth.
I am glad to see that Amazon is not limiting the Fire TV just to Amazon stuff, which I think is brilliant. They if they had stuck with only Amazon stuff, kind of like what they've done with the Kindle Fire, it would not sell nearly as much.
Nikki in our chat says, one set-top box for every channel. I have one on my Roku, I watch Hulu. On my Apple TV, I watch Netflix. On my Google TV, I watch nothing because it doesn't work. So, it's cool. The gaming thing is an advantage. Nobody's really spoke about gaming. I'm just waiting to see what Apple does with the next version of the Apple TV, because I do feel that they're going to incorporate gaming into this.
That and the next step really is incorporating TV programming.
Mm.
The set-top boxes have very little TV programming built into them. Yes, they have, you know, maybe a channel here and there for the popular channels, Fox or ABC or CBS. But even then, you're still very limited in what content is actually delivered to those channels.
And I'll tell you, Apple TV does really well with that because they have ABC, and it's stellar and much better than watching things on demand. On demand is awful. The quality that I have noticed that I get from streaming media online via the Apple TV or what any one of these boxes, it's so much better than what I'm getting with cable. And I didn't notice this until I upgraded to a 65-inch TV. The 42-inch, really, you really couldn't tell. I got the bigger TV, and now I'm noticing how crappy cable looks. I mean, it looks atrocious compared to what I'm doing. You know, I'm doing 1080p, essentially, with Netflix. The WWE Network looks phenomenal on Apple TV compared to its cable programming. So,
yeah,
I don't know. All right, John.
It's not going to be until we really do start seeing. And this is kind of something that every cord cutter has really been wanting for a while, is that TV integration or more consistent content from TV networks with these devices.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do our picks of the week, John, or actually I should say your pick of the week.
Oh, you didn't find one yet?
I could not find a pick of the week this week. I'm so sorry.
Well, then let's not do a pick of the week.
Okay, you want to skip it?
We'll just skip it. We'll save my pick of the week for next week.
That's what we'll do. I don't even know what buttons I'm pressing. There we go. Screw it. We'll do it live. We'll skip the picks of the week this week. Next week, I promise I'll make it up. I'll get a good pick next week. I do have something here. I was going to do it as my pick of the week, but I haven't used it yet. A company sent me an indoor antenna for the metro area, so for cities. And I was hoping I would hook it up and use it, because I did review the one I got from Amazon, and I did have some issues with it, picking up some channels. So I'm going to do a comparison between the two antennas to see what's better.
Oh, cool.
So I'll have that ready for you guys next week. All things GFQ, go to gfqnetwork.com. You can subscribe to our show. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Subscribe. It helps us out when you do that. Also, follow us on Twitter at GFQ Network. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian, Suncast on Twitter. Also, we're on Facebook. The GFQ Network's on Facebook. Just search Guys from Queens on Facebook and you can find us. Am I missing anything? Oh, yeah. We were talking about Amazon. How could I forget? Use our Amazon affiliate, guys. If you're buying anything on Amazon, we have a little banner on the top of our website, on the new GFQ website. You can click on that, or you can go to gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it, so every time you buy something, we get a tiny little credit. And that tiny little credit goes a long way. Every time I need to buy a wire or a microphone for the studio or a camera. I appreciate the guys that have been doing it. I know a lot of you guys constantly use our affiliate page, and you know, it builds up at the end of the month. It's surprising to see how, you know, a couple dollars here and there becomes something. So thanks a lot and continue doing that. Also, we have a Patreon campaign for What the Tech. If you're a fan of What the Tech, or if you're a fan of this show and you want to kind of, you know, set it up. I don't know if we're going to be doing a Patreon for this show, but for What the Tech, we have one. And right now, we're about $260 a week, and we have a couple goals that we want to hit. If we get the goals, it's actually going to help these shows also, because we're going to do live, no mid-roll or pre-roll live streaming. We have a lot of stuff coming, and we need to hit those goals to kind of incorporate them. So if you have a couple bucks, you want to support what we do, we would love it. If not, nothing is changing. I won't be upset. It's okay. I'm choking now. I'm so upset. Go to our website, and we'll see you all next week. Good night, everybody.